Welcome to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network. Around 20 minutes packed with global news and analysis you won't find anywhere else. With me, Naomi Fowler. The TaxCast is available to everyone for download and broadcast on www.tackletaxhavens.com. Here's the Tax Justice News Roundup for this month. India's pushing G20 and OECD nations to adopt its transfer pricing policy, an interesting example of the shift in global power and loss of control over the discussion on international taxation by the OECD. Recently, I interviewed tax expert Lee Shepherd, and I asked her what's the best shot for countries who want to tax multinational companies fairly.
Watch what India does and copy it. Do what they do.
The European Union was supposed to be voting on improvements to their anti-money laundering directive this month, but it's been postponed. Why? Because they can't agree on who should be able to look at their proposed register of the real or beneficial owners of European companies. There's general agreement that banks and other entities would have access along with law enforcement authorities, but the conservative wing of the European Parliament wants citizens to demonstrate a legitimate interest before they can access the register. Perhaps they'll be ready to vote by next month. I'll let you know. JP Morgan Chase's $2 billion settlement, unlike other settlements, is not going to be tax deductible. The bank's paying out to avoid civil and criminal charges that they aided Bernie Madoff's fraudulent Ponzi scheme by failing to take their anti-money laundering responsibilities seriously. As part of the deal, JP Morgan has had to agree it won't claim or apply for a tax deduction or tax credit with regard to any federal, state, local or foreign tax for any part of the settlement. Remember the International Consortium of Investigative Journalism's offshore leaks expose on tax havens? Well, it created a crisis of confidence in the offshore industry. That's according to the company Offshore Incorporations Limited. They reckon over three quarters of the offshore professionals they surveyed said the consortium's stories reduced demand for offshore financial vehicles or prompted clients to move their business from one haven to another. The British Virgin Islands was hit particularly hard. Incorporations of new offshore companies there fell 21% last year. Let's not get too excited, though. The British Virgin Islands still dominate offshore new company registration activity by sheer volume. Another outcome of offshore leaks seems to be the number of Germans voluntarily disclosing secret offshore accounts. It tripled last year, according to the German Tax Union. And on this month's Roll of Dishonour, Olympic champion and one of the wealthiest athletes in the world, Mo Farah, has applied to become a tax exile from the UK. He's named Portland, Oregon as his main place of residence. Last year, the British government cut the top tax rate from 50% to 45%, even if Farah's accountants ever got him paying that amount. It seems for him, that's still too much. The company Boeing says it needs a tax incentive to make its planes safe, according to Citizens for Tax Justice in the US. The United States grants tax breaks supposed to encourage research companies wouldn't otherwise conduct in the course of their business. Citizens for Tax Justice asks if Boeing's not naturally inclined to make its planes safe without the benefit of a tax incentive, you might want to consider that before you book your next flight. Boeing's made billions in profits for a decade. Over that same time, they've paid nothing in federal or state corporate income taxes. And finally, do you remember one of the reasons Greece got into massive debt and had to be rescued with European Union and IMF bailouts going up to 240 billion euros? Because of ridiculous, completely over-the-top, unnecessary spending on arms. Apparently, millions in bribes paid by foreign defence contractors to employees of the Greek Defence Ministry were deposited in Swiss banks, including UBS, Credit Suisse, and Julius Baer. None of the banks has made any comment. And that's this month's roundup. Now we're going to talk to the Tax Justice Network's John Christensen for his take on this month. Right, John, you've just come back from the Cayman Islands. Now, tell me what you were doing there and tell me what your impressions on the situation there are. from a tax justice perspective.
I was attending a conference organised by the American Bar Association on the pros and cons of offshore. I was invited to participate in a debate between myself and Tim Ridley, the head of the Cayman Financial Authorities, for quite a long time. My impression, the Cayman Islands have in the past been what you might call a quick adapter. They are very fast-moving tax haven. They tend to move faster than the majority of other tax havens. They were quicker than most other tax havens, for example, to adopt automatic information exchange. And I came away with a very strong sense that this is an island which senses its own transition. They recognise the need for economic diversification. They are highly dependent on financial services and arguably are inflicted by the finance curse, which affects so many other small island tax havens. They're trying to diversify into medical tourism. They have big problems with their tourism industry generally, partly because they rely so heavily upon cruise ship traffic. And whilst I was there, I mean, day by day, every day, I would see four or five huge cruise ships arrive offshore Georgetown. Hundreds, if not thousands, of people would come ashore, mill around the shops, buying a few trinkets, all of which were imported, and then leave the island, leaving virtually no money behind. So it's quite clear that they need to build a stronger tourism industry if they're to reduce their dependence on finance.
There is some research going on this year, isn't there, into how economies like this can develop alternative economic models.
Yes, I mean, I've been looking at this. I mean, it's been one of my areas of focus for many, many years, and I know that some of the leading development NGOs are now addressing this issue of what can a plan B for an existing tax haven look like. I mean, the first major problem is that the cost of living in the Caymans is absolutely eye-watering. That means that whether it's construction or land prices or just general grocery items, everything is priced to the demands of the finance industry, and that would make it very difficult for others to diversify unless the finance industry was rolled back. And there's a big divide. I mean, there's an astonishingly noticeable divide between the established Caymanians and the expat communities, partly because the established Caymanians are finding fewer and fewer job opportunities outside the finance industry. And from what I was told, but I haven't had time to check on the statistics, it seems clear that quite a number of Caymanians, when they leave the island to go off to kind of get further education outside the island, decide not to come back. So there seems to be a net emigration of established Caymanians, mainly because the opportunities for them in Cayman are diminishing. At the conference itself, it was quite clear that many of the people within the Caymanian industry, the finance industry, are deeply resentful of measures to improve transparency. There are quite a few lawyers saying they really don't see any case, for example, revealing beneficial ownership on public record. Still quite a lot of resistance to making automatic information exchange effective, for example, by extending it to cover trusts. And generally, I felt whilst they were talking about the case for reform, they were saying, we don't want to be the first mover in these areas. In other words, we'll only open up public registries of beneficial ownership if everybody else is prepared to concede that. And of course, we've seen that game being played by Austria, Luxembourg and Switzerland in the context of the European Union's attempts to make automatic information exchange work. So there's going to be quite a bit of resistance from within the industry to measures like public disclosure of beneficial ownership.
Okay, let's talk about Formula One. All sorts of accusations flying around about bribery. Says a lot about the nature of global sports. Tell us what this one's all about.
Well, whenever we look at any major international sport, whether it's the World Cup or the Olympics, or in this case Formula One, what we find is a huge web of offshore companies controlling the sport. In the case of Formula One, the company controlling Formula One is incorporated in the tax haven of Jersey. Its logos and its trademarks belong to a company established in the Netherlands, and the holding company for Formula One is actually held through a complex group of companies based in Luxembourg and several other tax havens. So here we have a typical offshore tax avoidance scenario. What's happening here is that the head of Formula One, Bernie Eccleston, who's headed Formula One for many, many years and is a billionaire, is now being committed to trial in Munich, Germany, on an accusation that he bribed one of his former colleagues, and the bribe relates to the sale of the sport's commercial rights back in 2006. It's alleged that Mr. Eccleston paid a bribe to his colleague, Mr. Grubkowski, in the sum of $44 million to secure his support for the sale. But in return, Mr. Grubkowski is being accused by Mr. Eccleston of blackmailing him around accusations of tax avoidance. And this is something that Mr. Eccleston is clearly denying. And that raises the question, why is Formula One set up through this very complex web of offshore companies involving Jersey and Luxembourg and the Netherlands? There's no clear operational need to use these tax havens other than for the sake of tax avoidance.
And we've seen similar sort of structures with FIFA, the global football body, and the Olympics committee that's registered in Switzerland. So some similar sort of setups.
Why are these major international institutions allowed to use tax havens? And more importantly, why are they allowed to get away with requiring such enormous tax exemptions when they hold these major events in different countries? And the South African World Cup, to all intents and purposes, became a major tax exemption for all of the companies involved in that World Cup event. And the same seems to apply to the Brazilian World Cup and to Olympics. Are the countries that host the World Cups getting anything like the benefits that they should be getting from these major sporting events, when these sporting events are, to all intents and purposes, tax havens?
Thanks, John. John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network. Now it's time for the TaxCast special feature. While governments in the UK and the US seem to have decided they can afford to lose tax revenue from the Apples, the Googles and the Starbucks of this world, African countries certainly can't. But on top of the usual corporate accounting trickery, African countries are also racing against each other to offer companies so-called tax incentives. That could be a 10-year tax holiday. It might even be a 50-year tax holiday. This month, the TaxCast looks at tax incentives, Africa style.
Where do a majority of institutional investors see the greatest opportunity for investment growth in the next 10 years? The answer is Africa. The main attraction for investors is the emerging African.
If Africa's such a promising place to invest, why do African governments think they need to create special duty-free trade areas to keep companies and investors happy? They're busy granting them all kinds of tax breaks, reductions and exemptions. Lawyer and tax consultant Vera Mshana.
All of our countries have adopted market-led development policies. And so we rely on the private sector to create all these jobs, opportunities, and our people will then flourish and our country will develop. That hasn't been the result. And because we don't have any industries to talk about, we need to create these jobs for our people, we need infrastructure, we don't have any. So let's entice them by compensating them for what is wrong with our economies right now. Get them to invest in this and then we'll have all these wonderful things come up. So we subsidize investment by giving tax incentives. You see this in terms of export processing zones, especially in Kenya and Tanzania, and saying if you set up a business here, which is all about creating goods which will be sent for exports, then you don't have to pay any taxes. That's both indirect and direct taxes. But the problem with that is that if we are all doing that, if we are all now using our tax systems, we're going to what they call race to the bottom, in the sense that we're all going to beat ourselves out of getting any money from these people by giving away so much.
And that's why governments in East Africa have committed themselves to reviewing and reducing tax incentives together. But agreeing that such giveaways really can't go on is one thing. Solid, coordinated action is quite another. Yet the situation is urgent. The Tax Justice Network estimates just four East African countries are losing up to $2.8 billion a year between them because of tax incentives. Alvin Mosioma of Tax Justice Network Africa has researched the damage they cause.
Rwanda gives two times the amount it spends on this health sector as tax incentives. In Uganda, similarly, they spend about twice that amount on tax incentives as what they invest on the education sector. In Kenya, it's about 3% of the national GDP that is given out as a tax incentive. So these figures are not only shocking, but they are just a tip of the iceberg in terms of how much revenue the government is letting out of the door, while at the same time they are concentrating on borrowing both domestically and internationally and keeping the country more indebted. So it is basically its inability to finance its own budget.
Now, I think I know what you're wondering next. Who on earth ever thought things like 10, 20, 30-year corporate income tax holidays were a good idea? Tanzanian Member of Parliament Tundi Lissu.
The first thing that went wrong was back in the early 90s, our policy-making mandate was taken by interests outside, i.e. the World Bank and its many agencies. So, for instance, the tax laws, the sweeping changes that were made to the tax regime came out as a result of studies that were carried out and funded, commissioned, and paid for by the World Bank. And there was minimal discussion in Parliament. So that's where things went wrong.
The World Bank continues to encourage tax incentives. Every year it produces a doing business index, rating countries in terms of attractiveness for investment. Unfortunately, tax still features strongly, despite all the evidence that it's not a determining factor in investment decisions. And there are other influences, of course, too. Alvin Mosioma again.
Until very recently, when the finance minister in Kenya prepared the budget, before it's even presented in Parliament, the first thing he would do was to fly to Paris, meet the Paris Club, present the budget there. The Paris Club is the club of donors, the lead European donor countries. The Paris Club would look at that budget and say, okay, cross this, reduce this, remove this and all this. And then after that is done and they get the agreement on the consent of the Paris Club, they would come back to Kenya and present it for Parliament. And the reason for that was that the government was funding much of his expenditure from finances that are coming from outside, external resources. But now we are seeing an increased dependence on taxes. Actually, 98% of recurrent expenditure in Kenya comes from taxes.
So how can a country develop when it's undermining its own tax base? And for other countries still highly dependent on aid, external donors can still set conditions on governance and budgets. But of course, like everywhere else, African countries are influenced heavily by the world's most powerful countries and the institutions they dominate, still advocating economic policies that serve companies, not people, like the idea of tax incentives. Economist Lee Shepherd.
The huge pressure you get from the OECD, oh, you must be part of the big boys club to be part of the world economy, to be accepted, to show you're open for business, that's all nonsense. If you've got something they want, they will come.
And tax incentives are damaging in other ways. Lawyer and tax consultant again, Vera Mshana.
The way that we give our tax incentives is not systematic, it's not objective, there's no criteria. It's usually the Minister of Finance, who is the topmost policymaker when it comes to finance in our countries, will have the discretion. So the law is usually framed in a sense of the Minister of Finance may provide incentives in this area if you meet whatever list he has in his head or she has in her head. So obviously that's an opportunity for corruption and abuse. Now we have harmful tax competition in the sense that we are not receiving any tax revenue. We have these development goals that we're not going to reach. There really hasn't been, as a result of tax incentives, any meaningful economic development in the region. Most investment, especially if it's genuine, is not driven by tax incentives.
And the Tax Justice Network's Alvin Mosioma isn't the only one whose research has shown that tax incentives don't work.
Actually, companies don't consider tax as a criteria when they decide where they're investing. And there has been surveys that have been carried out, including by the World Bank, the IMF, the UNCTAD, the Africa Development Bank, among other institutions, where they carried a survey in terms of asking companies what kind of factors do you consider when you are deciding where you're investing. Of course, the availability of resources is very important. Reliable power, reliable energy, good infrastructure, good roads to be able to transport your goods, skilled labor, a legal framework. All these are factors that are more determinant in terms of the decision-making of companies where they invest. Tax is just an add-on.
So in other words, what companies are actually looking for in a good investment location are all the things that taxation provides. Citizens often aren't aware of the staggering costs of these giveaways their governments are making. Tanzanian Member of Parliament and Chair of the Public Accounts Committee, Zito Zuberi Kabwe.
We have to make African leaders, African politicians, African parliamentarians, African media comprehend, understand how big this problem is. And taxation for Africa is a developmental issue. But what I see now is an emergence of a group of parliamentarians, young parliamentarians, who now see that we have been looking away from a very serious issue, and we are able now to raise the voices about this. Now we know.
There is a lot of talk of cooperation and harmonization among African countries on tax. They've established a customs union with the aim of reducing harmful tax wars. A code of conduct against harmful tax competition has been drawn up. There are proposals to agree to implement the same transfer pricing rules and common VAT, income tax and excise duty systems. But governments have missed deadline after deadline. Pressures to fulfil their commitments need to come from their citizens. Vera Mshana again.
The issue of granting tax incentives can be a human rights violation. Definitely. There is this principle in human rights law that says that a country is obliged to use its maximum available resources in order to allow people to fulfill their human rights. By subsidizing that multinational, you have to tax me more. The more you give away tax, the less likely you are to build schools for my children.
There's strength in unity, and I think that we need to be able to fund our own development from our own money. This is the essence of tax. This is the importance of being able to be economically independent. We need to find ways of ensuring that money that is generated in Africa is also kept in Africa for its own development. And I think that's key for poverty eradication in Africa.
You've been listening to The Taxcast from the Tax Justice Network. We'll be back on The Taxcast next month.